just done 8 days in a row, and wow, each day got stinkier, and then I had a performance review yesterday.
Absolute cancer management.
So, welcome back to the Adamsons Versus. We hope you enjoyed the last episode, which was... What was the last episode again?
It was the Adamsons Versus the 11-year-old superhero.
Ah, which is a very misleading title, but yeah, welcome back.
I think we drew that one with the 11-year-old superhero.
Yeah, 1-1. This week, this episode, we are talking about the sort of Adamsons versus Deliveroo, although it's just Adamson. It's not really yourself versus Deliveroo. I have
a few things to say, though.
Oh, okay. So this all started. It started off as something that I'd never expected to happen. When you order food from Deliveroo, you expect it to be a relatively painless experience. You know, you order food, it arrives, you eat it. Fine. But the area that we were in at the time is Clydebank. And Clydebank's got loads of different restaurants to pick from. So we thought we were spoilt for choice. There's loads of drivers in the area. Cool. How wrong I was. I can't even remember the first thing we ordered. What was it? I think it was a Nando's. And it was a click and collect Nando's. So we went to the door, collected it. And believe it or not, Nando's, the peri-peri chicken place, didn't give me my chicken. I ordered a meal. I think it was boneless thighs. No boneless thighs. So I was like, you had one job, Nando's, to give me the chicken.
Yeah, I mean, if Nando's doesn't deliver chicken, what's Nando's for?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. So I went through Deliveroo and I was like, guys, you've not delivered my chicken. That was all sorted. They gave me another, they gave me the meal, and that was that. The next time, what did we order? It was something like... It was Pizza Hut. This is what started it all. Pizza Hut started this. So we ordered a Pizza Hut, and the driver took about 2 hours to get to us, and it's a 10-minute drive. We got the wrong order. It was the strangest order I've ever seen. It was like red onion and pepper pizza, and then 2 2-liter bottles of Pepsi Max Cherry. And we didn't order that.
Someone else's order.
So that's someone on the sex offenders register order, because that is some red pepper.
What was it again? Red pepper?
Red onion and pepper pizza.
Okay.
No meat, no stuffed crust, none of that good stuff. Yeah. Just that, and then two bottles of Pepsi Max Cherry.
So a vegetarian, you mean?
At this point, is there even a difference? Anyway, apologies. I'm not even going to apologise to all the vegetarians out there. You can go fuck yourself. No, not the vegetarians. You're all right. It's the vegans we don't like. Anyway.
Especially after they built that space bypass. That's a really old joke for the kids there.
Me, I didn't get it.
it's from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy at the beginning
saw that film.
No. Well, the film was shite, but it was originally a very popular TV show.
No one saw that either.
No, everyone saw that. It was like the Monty Python of its era, but it starts with an alien race destroying the Earth to build a space equivalent of a motorway bypass, and they're called the Vogons. So everyone says, I hate vegans. People of my age make that kind of joke.
Thing is, I don't disagree. I like the idea of veganism. Like, if the food was nice, I would do it. You know, I think, you know, I don't want an animal to die, but animals are delicious and vegan food isn't. So, you know, where do we draw the line? Anyway, back to the Deliveroo thing. So, wait, we said to Pizza Hut, look, Pizza Hut was kind of out of Pizza Hut's hand, but Deliveroo were like, okay, we'll refund the order. So basically, every time these orders were getting cancelled, they were just refunding the entire amount, which is something I would have been hesitant to do if it had been like the local Indian or Chinese, like a small business, because they don't make a lot of money from that, and sometimes those mistakes happen. But it was kind of like a repetitive pattern of these big chains are like a more expensive place to buy from than your local Indian. Local Indian's like a £15, £20 thing, whereas the Nando's, when you get it, it's like a more expensive kind of treat. So I was getting my money back, and I was more than
it's
happy.
It's basically restaurant prices, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And Nando's, then Pizza Hut, so we got the money back, and then KFC, and we got KFC, and they were only missing one item. It was the popcorn chicken, which, to be fair, is the best bit of a KFC. But I said, look, it's missing the popcorn chicken. Can I just get that £5.50 refunded? And they're like, yeah, no worries. They refunded me like £32. I was like, these guys don't want me to leave. There's something going on here. So I got the money again. I was like, it was handy because, you know, we basically weren't paying for food. I didn't pay for a takeaway between the end of October to the start of January. But it was all shite food and missing items, and it was all cold. So I can't remember the next one we tried to order. I think we ordered. What did we order? I think it was. It might have been an. It was an. I think it was another Nando's. But this time I was fucking sick of it because it was two in a row from Nando's, and the last time I had to drive back and pick up the order. So I got the money back from Deliveroo and then phoned the restaurant and they gave me a complimentary free meal.
Oh, right. So you doubled up.
So I doubled up. So I thought I'll use the Deliveroo credit for something else and I'll just get that free order from Nando's. So I phoned up Nando's and I went, yeah, a few weeks ago my entire meal was stinking. Like, the missus didn't get good food, I didn't get good food, so I got a complimentary meal. I just kind of like to cash that in now. And they're like, yeah, no worries. You'll only get your meal complimentary. And I went, why? And they went, that's just like how we do it. We don't offer the full meal. And I went, oh, okay. But both of our meals were shite, so surely we both get the complimentary meal. And they went, no. So I hung up the phone and didn't even cash it in. I think they took my name off the book. I was fucking furious. If I'd got that meal from Nando's, I probably would have been arrested. So there was that. So we had this... By this point, the delivery credit is about £53. Right, they just kept refunding the entire meal. And
the thing
kept
is, that credit's not worth any if they can't deliver you a meal, right?
Yeah. So I think we ordered a... What did we order? We ordered a KFC and thought, fuck it, please be okay. And the guy got to literally around the corner from the house, said he delivered it, didn't chap the door and fucked off. And I was like, you're fucking joking me.
Well, did he leave the food? Or?
No, he just said he delivered it. Said he delivered it and just fucked off. And this, but like at this time, I was on a lot of morning shift, and the food was, we'd ordered the food at 5, it wouldn't show up till 7, 8 o'clock at night. And by that point, I don't really want to eat KFC. Because, yeah, you know, it's a heavy, greasy meal, and that's just kind of late. So we ended up having to drive to McDonald's for like a quick bite to eat because we were absolutely starving.
This is when you're like moving in and doing stuff and you don't really have a lot of time to cook at that point, do you?
No. This is when we were just in the like process of like moving in and like we didn't have a lot of time. She was finishing at 6 and then I'm up at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
So we've got like a couple hours before I'm going to my bed, so it's kind of like, fuck, quickly order something on this. We ended up driving from Clydebank to Brayhead, which is like a good 20-minute drive, to the Prezzo, and we cashed in the Deliveroo credit there. Spent like £40 on a Prezzo, but see, up until that point, every time, like, I just wanted the food to be good. You know, at this point, I just wanted to leave. I wanted to leave. I felt like I joined a takeaway cult.
Yeah. You like, can't
I leave. Joined the Scientology version of takeaways, and they were not keen on me leaving. It was like, guys, I just want this. I want this to be over. And they're like, oh, we'll just refund you the credit. It's like, what part of this are you not getting? Every time I order from you guys, you manage to fuck it up. What? There's no incentive for me to stick with you guys. Please just deliver one meal. Like, I was pleading with them, and they every time. And this must have been. This sounds really unhealthy, but this must have been about 10 times between like the end of October and the start of January, where it was just like, should we just order a quick meal? Yeah, sure. And it was getting beyond a joke. They just wouldn't let me leave. It was like, one of us.
See, they do this like membership stuff. It's changing, going off track a little bit. But someone sent me an article. So you really need to read this. It's like, it's all about, you know, it's probably something to do with like Boris and his money laundering or something like that. I said, okay, I'll read it, but it's the Times, and I don't do paywalls, and I don't do the fucking Times either. I don't do Murdoch publications, but so you'll read it. So look, it's a 30-day free trial, and then you can cancel. All right, I'll read the article, and and there was at no point was I like, oh, I'll have a read of the sports pages and see if the coverage is any good. I'm not doing this. So I read the article, set a reminder in my calendar for like 3 days before the end of the subscription to call up and cancel it. And you can't cancel it with an email. You can't cancel it by going and clicking online. You have to call a telephone number. Oh, when you call a telephone number, there's a guy there going, so I'm calling up to cancel my free trial. I don't want to move on to the full subscription. And he starts going, oh, well, but there's a lot of really good content. And I'm like, no,
fuck
I'm
off.
Gonna cancel it. And what it was is that he read me about 4 or 5 prepared statements after each time I said, no, I want to cancel it. Now, I'm not sure if that's even kind of legal because, you know, that's like, you know.
No means no. Like.
Yeah. But I just thought, you've got a bunch of people in a call centre who are clearly incentivized on how many people they manage to talk out of cancelling their subscription. I don't know how many timid people are out there who would actually fold under that kind of pressure. But it's what it's entirely about is locking you in and making it impossible for you to leave. Anyway, that was me changing the subject. That's not
No, but we finally got it sorted. We went to Prezzo and got some Italian food, and that was it. I uninstalled the app, and I've not been back on it since. But that was just a kind of wee caveat, kind of wee story to kind of get us into the kind of problem we have with places like Deliveroo and Just Eat. And I'm going to touch on the point I kind of raised earlier about if the food was bad, I'd order from, like, if I was ordering from a smaller takeaway, I wouldn't really claim the refund. Because, like you said about articles, I read an article about... it was a guy who ran a, like, I think it was an Indian takeaway or like a little kebab shop. And what was happening was people were exploiting the Just Eat refund thing. So the refund process for these delivery things is that you tick off the things that was wrong with the meal. And I was always honest. I said, look, this food like was wrong, the order was wrong, or it took 2 hours, or the bits were missing. They were refunding me the entire thing, but I wasn't expecting that. But what people are doing with these things now is that they're kind of chancing it. Remind me to tell you about a good chancer story in a minute. But they, so basically they'd order their food, and then they would say, oh, food wasn't delivered, or food wasn't delivered on time, food was cold. And this guy basically went to the papers and just said, look, I delivered the people that complained and got their money back, like, in person. I went to them and went, there you go. I gave them the food. It was piping hot. I got it from the restaurant there in the quickest time possible. And they still complain because they know they can get their money back, or they can get the refund credit back and just get a supply of takeaways. And they were just exploiting these local businesses that were making no money. And the point this guy made was that it's literally just a case of if you guys order a takeaway and it's not good, you just go on your app and say, there's a problem with my order. And they just say, okay, well... approve refund credit, and delivery was almost instant. I can't speak for Just Eat, but Just Eat will do a similar process where they don't even back check it. They don't even ask for photos. They don't even ask for proof. They just go, yeah, fine, this person must be telling the truth. And people are missing out on lots and lots and lots of money. So on top of paying high fees for being on Deliveroo and for being on Just Eat, Deliveroo and Just Eat are then completely fucking cunty to the people that, to the businesses and restaurants that are on their site or on their apps, and just drain them in subscription fees, and then just let customers drain them who are, you know, chancing it and basically getting free food. So that was what we wanted to kind of talk about, this kind of industry of how they're just exploiting, people are exploiting that kind of flaw in takeaway ordering. Have you had any experience with that? Because I remember you wanted to talk about it because you had a few thoughts about it.
Before I do that, you said to remind you to tell that chancer story.
Oh, sorry. This isn't really related to takeaways, but it was very funny at work the other day. It was a definite chancer. So I can't remember what I was doing. I've had a very busy week. And I was just kind of rushing about. And I think I was going back into the warehouse, and this old guy stopped me. Now, this sounds bad on face value. And he goes, excuse me, son. I've just paid my TV license. I could show you my receipt, but I've got no money. I've just got no money at all. Is there any chance I can get a free loaf off you? And I just went, no. Because, right, one, I don't really have the authority to give out food. You know, I don't, you know, I've not got the kind of, I can't just, but yeah, take a free loaf for me. I've not really got that authority. The business does focus on minimising losses and minimising wastage, and that would go down as loss and wastage. But after that, I thought, oh, that old guy, you know, I feel a little bit bad. And then I went,
yeah.
Who the fuck chooses Songs of Praise over literal survival? Who chooses the BBC, an organisation that has employed several paedophiles, over a couple week shop? Well, how much is the TV license done? Like 170 quid?
Yeah, well, the thing is...
That's like 3 weeks shopping.
Yeah, well, the chances are it's not even the BBC they want to watch. I'll defend the BBC overall. I mean, it's a large organisation, and there's some bad stuff has happened. But yeah, I understand. It's people don't want to be cut off from the world, and it's a hell of a choice to be forced to make.
Just just get a Fire Stick or just get a Netflix subscription.
Yeah,
you're probably a Netflix subscription's like 60 quid a year.
Yeah, you're probably talking about someone who is gonna struggle with that, but yeah.
No, this guy was a chancer.
Yeah, well, obviously he was a chancer, yeah. But I mean, say he was telling the truth, that would be a...
Even if he is telling the truth, if it was a case of that, don't pay your TV license over food. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know that sounds kind of like, oh, I'm not going to have TV till I can afford it, which might be next month and the month after, but well, buy the loaf of bread.
The problem is that the I don't want to start siding with people like Nadine Dorries who've been trying to have a go at the BBC, but the way the TV licence works is that if you have a TV, you have to have a TV licence. So,
no, it's if you watch live TV.
No, it's if you... But basically, they will go and say, if you've got a TV, we'll fine you for not having a TV licence.
But surely it's if you... No, it's if you watch... It's what you do with the TV, surely.
No, it's very strict.
Aye, but it's not if you've just got a TV, because if you've got a TV and you... Like, if you've got a TV and you just play your Xbox on it, you don't even watch that.
So, but yeah, it's still a tough choice to make.
This is a message to anyone out there. If the TV license people come to your door, I think this is a very Scottish thing. My missus actually quite scaled me. I've never been properly scaled by my missus until she started talking about the TV license. She went, James, if they come to the door, don't let them in. Tell them to go. And it was like a kind of like Godfather threat, like, wah, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. But yeah,
you want to shut my TV license on this the day of my daughter's wedding.
Are you trying to make me feel bad for this old guy?
No, I'm just...
No,
I'm not trying to make you feel bad for this old guy. He's probably taking the piss. He's probably a chancer using that as an excuse to, like, for not wanting to buy food. Personally, I think, you know, there's no way that the supermarket should just be giving away free food to anyone who asks that question. That's not a sustainable business model. The fact that someone's in that, if he was telling the truth, I think it's shocking that people are allowed to get into that state, and we should be asking questions of the government and why demand for food banks has gone up 3,000% in the last 10 years. I'm not saying, I certainly don't think that the person who's just trying to work and for a living in a shop is supposed to just hand out food to everyone with a story. That's clearly not going to work. I just think there are a lot of people in tough situations, and The question is not what should they give up so they can eat. The question is who the fuck put them in that situation? Why isn't that person being strung up at the Tower of London?
It sounds like you're trying to make me feel guilty for potentially killing an old man.
No, not you, mate. Not you. I'm having a go at 10 years of Tory austerity.
You fucking send him back. Wait, no.
So back to Deliveroo. My thoughts on this Deliveroo is that I think this is when Just Eat was actually the thing, when Deliveroo hadn't really kind of hit, but it's the same thing, really. It's obviously very convenient. You go on Just Eat, it's a lot easier. You just click. You don't have to, like, phone up. I know Kevin Bridges did a great routine about all this, about how it's actually part of the Saturday night experience to phone up and not sure if you've you know, had it all written down or not, and then sitting there waiting in the suspense. You go on Just Eat, you click, you don't have to talk to anyone, you know, in a noisy restaurant, you can't quite hear you. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to, like, read out your address 50 times. No, it's with a W, blah, blah, blah. You're like, yeah, it's more convenient. And I did that on Just Eat, got a takeaway delivered. This is a few years ago. And the takeaway is one of my local places. And he put in the takeaway a 10% off voucher for if I order online next time. So if I ordered direct to the takeaway next time, rather than going through Just Eat,
that's interesting.
And I said, okay, why? What, you know, so I thought, okay, well, thank you. I said, and I worked out that it's because they Just Eat charge such a big fee for the rest of the takeaways and restaurants to be on there that it's killing their profit margin. So they would rather deliver, you know, to you direct because they've got mouths to feed and bills to pay, and it shouldn't all just be going to Just Eat. So Just Eat charge about 15% per takeaway meal.
Fucking hell!
And they don't add that as a commission on top of your takeaway. Do you know what I mean?
It comes out of their pocket, right?
And even Deliveroo, right? When actually when you go on Deliveroo, right, and Uber Eats, you think, all right, the bit that they're doing is delivering the food. So presumably their cut of it is is part of the delivery charge to the driver. Yeah, the driver's charging you £2.50 or whatever it is, or £3 to make that delivery. Whatever Deliveroo make is part of the service fee, right? If you're paying Deliveroo a service fee, the driver gets some of it, Deliveroo gets some of it. Is that the model? And that would be, you know, potentially a problem in itself, because Deliveroo and Uber Eats drivers are essentially underpaid and overworked and desperately struggling to kind of,
like, 0 hours,
you know, make 500 kind of deliveries a day so that it's actually worth their while to work. But actually, on top of that, Deliveroo and Uber Eats, and I'm just going to check this because I looked it up in an article. Deliveroo charge to the restaurant for being listed on their website, 20 to 25% commission. It varies. Probably because the big companies are, you know, managed to negotiate a better deal. But say your local takeaway is getting charged 25% per takeaway meal to be on Deliveroo, and Uber Eats takes 35%.
Fucking hell. So
if you spent 20 quid on a takeaway, Deliveroo have taken like seven. No, so Uber Eats have taken 7 quid of that. So for the takeaway for the takeaway provider, so if you spend 20 quid on a delivery, this is completely separate to the delivery charge, right? The driver gets paid 3 quid, whatever it is, right?
Oh my God,
Uber Eats takes 7 quid when you spend 20 quid on a takeaway. So that takeaway company needs to be able to make that takeaway and pay all its people, and pay its electricity bill and its business rates. For 13 quid. So whatever they've put into the meal, and Uber Eats is just listing on a website. They are, you know, you got to think that for your local takeaway to run its own website on Squarespace or something would not be 35% of its annual turnover, right? And it's just right. it's an absolute fucking racket, because Uber Eats is just there. All you're doing is like clicking and getting it, and they're taking an absolute fucking swinging rate out of it, just so some fucking tech millionaire broflake who wears his Converse trainers and pajamas to business meetings can buy another fucking yacht.
So, do you reckon, like, with that takeaway you ordered with on Just Eat, that he was trying to phase out the signing up? Like, so basically, I imagine a lot of takeaways have signed up to Just Eat because they're like, oh, cool, look, we don't have to have someone on the phone all day.
Well, the thing is, it's not a fixed fee. So they're not paying a fixed fee just to be on Just Eat. What happens is when you order on Just Eat, 20 quid goes in and Just Eat give them like...
So do you reckon he's trying to kind of fix... So he's signed up to Just Eat and gone, oh, you fucker, I'm losing so much money. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put these vouchers into these customers and then hopefully phase out the use of Just Eat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what I started doing. I started doing, right, I'll use Just Eat as a directory so I know what all the takeaways
copy
are.
Copy the order.
And then I would like see what's on the menu and I will order it direct to say, fuck you, Just Eat. I'd rather the takeaway got the money. Because right, every takeaway company, I mean, it's different with Nando's and all of them, but every takeaway company living near you, they're a small business, right? So they're not fucking headquartered in Luxembourg, so they don't have to pay any corporation tax, right? They're much more limited on what they're able to claim back in VAT and all that shit and all these different offshore fucking funds. They are, you know, doing millions of pounds of business, working really hard, employing people locally, all of that stuff, sending their kids to school in your local area, keeping your fucking high street alive when, you know, everything else is going out of town or online. And I'd rather they got the money, and, you know, some of that money is kind of going back to the, you know, A, the national economy and B, the local economy, than just more money being put in the massive bucket marked fucking unaccountable, you know, it only exists in cyberspace fucking tech company taking the piss. It's the same when like Uber was driving and everyone was going, well, you realize your data's being shared and the driver, you know, you've got a dodgy driver who's like using it to stalk and sexually harass people and there's no safety restrictions. So, well, we're just an online platform. We're not a transport company, so we shouldn't be subject to the same regulation on like fucking emissions, death, data protection. It's like, fuck you. Well, it's like they want to exist completely out of the system but take all of our fucking money.
It sounds like it's something that's completely unsustainable, and the companies have realised that, and that's being reflected on the business. Because if they try and reflect that with the customers will just stop using their app. Like because I've never understood how they make it sustainable. Because a Deliveroo delivery fee is something stupid, like £3.
Like, well, that's because Deliveroo was taking a lot more than that £3. They're actually taking 25% of the cost of every
but
takeaway.
That, I imagine that money's going to them. It's not going to the drivers. No, so no.
Well, because the drivers are people who have got a choice, you know, in terms of delivery jobs. It might be their second job or whatever it's doing. It's like, well, I'm either doing this for Amazon, Yodel, DPD, you know, or whoever. Or, you know, maybe they're an Uber driver and they're like topping up their deliveries with these takeaways. It's if they had a choice, they would be doing something else. But you've got loads of people who are, you know, who's obviously their job opportunities are limited, so they're doing that.
But the sustainability of that is quite difficult to pin down, because with Amazon delivery drivers, what they do is they say, right, you've got X amount of parcels delivered a day. I'm not trying to stick up for Amazon because Amazon are very overworked, or the Amazon workers are very overworked, I should say.
Yeah.
But they plan out your route. They say, you've got 100 parcels. This is parcel one. This is parcel 100. And you can do it. And it's like, it maximizes the time. Whereas if a delivery driver delivers delivers one thing from KFC, takes 50 minutes to get there, 50 minutes to get back, and then delivers a Pizza Hut and takes 50 minutes to get there. So they've done two deliveries in an hour.
Yeah.
That they get paid £3.50 per delivery. That's £7 an hour. So that isn't sustain. That's not a living wage.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's just they must be trying to do it on. But for example, the reason that your delivery is taking like however long to deliver is possibly because they're like loading up with loads of deliveries and trying to deliver them all and getting themselves in a muddle.
And that's why that isn't sustainable, because it is fresh and like food that depends on temperature and things like that.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we've had things, because we live a little bit just slightly outside of London now. It's a little bit harder to get some things delivered, and sometimes we can get a Nando's and sometimes we can't, because they're like 3 miles away. And I think there was a point when the delivery driver was going, oh shit, I can't, no one's taking the job, so they just stopped delivering to where we are. Yeah. Because obviously the delivery driver is sitting there going, okay, well, I will hang around a busy area that's got lots of takeaways, and I'll deliver to there, and make as many as I can in an hour. But then if you're somewhere where the drive is a little bit longer from the takeaway, you're probably deprioritised compared to the other jobs.
I think it works better on where you are. So back in Aberdeen, Aberdeen's quite a small city, and it's got like one big street in the town centre.
Yeah, they can all just hang around there, can't they?
You can get from the town centre to the edge of town, which is about 3.5 miles, which is a bit of a distance, but there's not many Deliveroo places out there. Whereas
it's the evening, right? Most people are delivering after the rush hour's finished, right?
So I think it depends on where you are, but you just feel bad for the takeaways and stuff like that. And
well, this is the thing. It's like, look at all the people who are getting the piss taken out of them. I mean, I remember when Uber, the car thing came around, and it is convenient, right? And it's, and if you're in the center of town and you want to try and get a normal cab home, it can be really expensive, but it's probably preferable to at least that money to be going to like a real person rather than some fucking offshore bank account. But I was thinking the reason people do this, right, is because it's so much easier to click than it is to go, well, where am I? Where's the local? Because it's not about getting the local minicab firm to where you live, to somewhere, to wherever. It's when you're away from home. This is the big one, isn't it? You're away from home. You don't know where the local minicab firm is, do you? It's late at night. You're a woman on your own. You don't know if you can actually flag down a taxi where you are. You don't know who's hanging around the taxi rank. You click an Uber. You don't even have to go outside until the screen says that they're there. I totally get why people want to do it, right? What was really shameful for me was that this started up in London. Transport for London has the capability to set up a website that links up all the minicab drivers.
The
potential. So, and then Transport for London starts cracking down on Uber, saying, oh, it's taking away money from our drivers. We don't like all of this unregulated services. Well, you've been sitting there. You're one of the biggest cities in the world, one of the wealthiest cities in the world. Why didn't you set something up so people could just click and get their local minicab? And these tech companies have like stepped in and filled a vacuum, but it is a massive piss take. So I used to use Just Eat as a directory, and if it's not like Nando's, which is quite a nice treat, and it's sometimes a little bit healthier. I'm trying to be healthier at the moment, and if you don't want to treat yourself, you can at least order healthy Nando's with no bread or something. All right, well, that's a concession to
fuck that,
health.
Man, peri-peri chips,
but you know,
10 wing roulette.
I'm
boneless
less...
thighs. Fuck that, man. What are you ordering? Don't fucking say you're eating healthy on the fucking podcast because people are listening. Tell me your order. Tell me your order right now.
I have lost a stone since the beginning of January.
And that's because you've stopped ordering the peri-peri chips?
I've stopped ordering fucking anything. I'm fucking hating life. But anyway,
can you hear the sadness in his voice, listeners?
It was your little brother, his birthday party last Sunday, and my wife, who is of Asian extraction, had like cooked up samosas.
Did you make
and
that
all this
weird
stuff.
Asian extraction? What the fuck?
Well, it's complicated. She's from Mauritius, right? So it's not like I can just say she's Indian, right? But she's. I'm going to cut this out. So my wife's Asian, right? And she's got samosas and all of this stuff down on the table, and she's cooked up all of these different treats with like pastry around them, all that stuff. There's cake, there's cupcakes, there's fucking crisps, and I ate fucking none of it. There was a little plate of cocktail sausage.
You fucking rat coward.
There was a plate of cocktail sausages in the corner, and I was eating the cocktail sausages. I had to ignore fucking everything else.
Surely you gave yourself a day, man.
I did not give myself a day. I was being absolutely hardline about it. Anyway.
What's wrong with you?
Sorry, we're getting completely off track here.
I'm fucking furious.
So, no, more to the point. I don't know. I shouldn't have opened that. I shouldn't have opened that particular Pandora's box. So
I'm starving.
Anyway, back to the point. The main point is, I don't mind if it's a chain or something that you get delivery to do. You know, I still feel a little bit bad that the driver is being exploited by the takeaway. But otherwise, I wouldn't have ordered Nando's at all. You know, unless you feel like driving over there, and especially during COVID, I was not doing that. But when it's the local takeaway, I would much rather persevere with the phone call or even go and pick it up myself, because I don't want them to be losing fucking 30% of their revenue to some fucking cunt who doesn't even exist in this country's tax system.
A lot of these places now have got their own websites because they recognise the convenience of doing that.
Even if it's just Facebook, do you know what I mean?
They've set up a fucking portal fucking and you just... You go on and it's just... I think we're such a socially awkward species now. And it's convenient.
It is. It's the talking. It's the talking to another human being. I do wrestle with it. I sit there and go, oh, is it worth it? Shall I just click and I don't have to talk to a person?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's difficult because these guys are obviously feeling the pinch. And I think a clear example of that was when in the old shop I used to work in up in Aberdeen, there was an Indian restaurant right next door to us, and they would buy their chicken from us.
Yeah.
They would, because it was so much cheaper, it was...
Yeah, they'd buy job lots of just standard chicken breast or whatever, right?
Not even that. They'd buy our chicken thighs, which are a kilogram's about £1.80, I want to say. I can't remember the exact price. But it's quite good value. And they'd just chop the bone out of that and then use that. And then they could get like a few curries out of it and sell the curries for like £6, £7 or whatever it is.
And that's obviously like, they're only doing that because whatever's happening with their local wholesaler isn't as good value. Otherwise, they'd have gone there, right?
Yeah. It must be.
Or Costco or whatever they would use.
Yeah, so they're obviously having to find ways to kind of minimise. I mean, it's not to say that the chicken that we sell isn't good quality, but, you know, for them to, like, have to, like, cut corners like that.
Some people manage to maximise profit and reduce cost to the consumer with, like, you know, engineering their supply chain from end to end, do you know what I mean? And some people are just doing it by, like, cutting the margins, you know?
Yeah, but...
It's like when you see like some of the producers in this country when they talk to the big supermarkets. I don't know, you know, I can't comment on who you work for, but some of the big supermarkets, you find out how they treat the farmers and producers in this country, and it's fucking shameful. Without going into detail on where I work, I work for various clients, and I remember going into a meeting. I used to have to sit in all the meetings rather than just do the project for the client. I had to sit in the team meetings and listen to all the fucking sales stuff. And one of these companies, they're food and do food among other things. And I remember them saying that the agenda was like, one topic was, you know, it's corporate social responsibility. We need to demonstrate that we're doing everything in an ethical way, which is not just about diversity. It's about fair treatment of people and all that sort of thing. And the full list of, you know, being a nice, good company, the stuff they like to say in their adverts, right? And then the next topic on their agenda was, we've worked out, right, that if we increase our payment terms to our suppliers from 90 days to 120 days, we're going to save all this money every year. So I want you to go into all your contracts and change the payment terms and make people wait 4 fucking months for their money. And I can't remember if it was me or it was someone else. I don't want to take credit as the hero of this story, but I do remember someone, I think it was several of us, immediately put our hands up and said, you do realise that the last topic of conversation before we started this was ethical treatment of all the people that we deal with.
Yeah, ethics isn't really high up on anyone in power's priorities.
No, it's high up in their list of things they want to be seen to do, which is why oil companies have got all these adverts about how fucking wonderful their wind farms are, but then you don't mention the fact that they're, you know, killing Nigerian journalists who are exposing what they're up to and fucking paying billions a year to lobby against anything to be done about climate change. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's,
well, there's a lot to be said for, you know, governments actually getting big corporations to pay their tax and getting people, you know, stop spending millions on nuclear weapons that we shouldn't be. We literally can't afford to be spending money on.
Yeah, I've had a pet theory for a few years now that the UN is absolutely no use at stopping wars breaking out, and we can obviously come to that in a minute. You know, there's no, the UN's mission is a noble one, and a lot of the stuff they do, like the refugee stuff and the, you know, so, you know, all these, you know, charities and stuff and humanitarian things are fine, but their main mission to have like international law and cooperation between nations to stop wars breaking out and to stop like abuses and you know, crimes against humanity happening. They're not very good at that. They're not very good at stopping any of that from happening. And I wonder if they change their priorities to actually provide some sort of international framework to stop corporations from avoiding tax, that there'd be a lot more economic stability and less fucking war in the first place. And that's probably the way to make war less likely to happen. Because if all these third world countries had enough money to fucking live on, do you know what I mean? If everyone in a third world country had a job and a car, and you know, both parents are working, so they don't want to have too many kids, and they're not like working a subsistence farm, so that, you know, they're not kind of scratching the ground every day. How much easier would it be to fix the environment? How many people like that join a fucking militia? How many people like that are displaced as children and get turned into child soldiers?
Well, yeah, the point I was
going to try and make was the economic deprivation that's the problem.
The point I was going to try and make was is that people, like, as like the general public are forced into kind of cutting, like, not like everyone that's like, you know, not got just money to kind of burn, that people have to kind of budget and things that are forced to watch their spending and, you know, count the pennies that they have. So therefore, people like farmers, you know, feel that kind of pinch because they have to basically overwork themselves to ensure that the supply's there, but it's cost efficient.
Yeah, so the ordinary person is not the person who can make the difference.
Like, but I don't know if I'm making this point clearly, but if we actually got, you know, people to pay their tax and stop spending money on stuff we didn't need, stop spending, you know, $7 billion on track and trace. So I know track and trace is pretty much a thing that they're not going to use anymore, but
yeah,
you know, things like that, you know, if we were actually any use at making sure that the money was there, maybe we could afford to pay farmers or, you know, subsidize costs for people so they don't have to spend absurd amount. Like, I hate the idea of having to be a farmer because it's such hard work and it seems like there's not really much benefits to it unless you've got an absolutely enormous farm and you've got to deal with three different supermarkets. You know what I mean?
The thing is, it's not just, you're absolutely right, and subsidies and things like that are part of it, but it's not just subsidies. If you're able to collect those taxes and also spend government money in a more, you know, effective way for everybody's benefit instead of on friends of the government who would like to sell some shitty masks, right? That money isn't just spent on subsidies, it's spent on investment in infrastructure, right? So for example, where's the infrastructure for electric cars? Where's the infrastructure for bikes? Where's the infrastructure for fixing the environment, right? It's not there. Oh, we haven't got the money. The government invests in that stuff. And everyone talks about, oh, you spend government money and then, you know, all it is an expense. Well, it's not, is it? If the government spends money on services, right, people have got, there are more people with jobs and they pay tax on that. So the government instantly gets something back in tax and other things from the money they spend on things like that. And then they get the investment if the thing that they spent is invested wisely. If they invest in infrastructure for like just the environment, just solar panels or anything like that, or wind farms, right? If they invest in that infrastructure, and they invest in education, you're going to have more people likely to have a good job, a well-paid job, right? And then you're not going to be spending money on like in the NHS on everyone having fucking asthma and breathing problems. So there's a knock-on effect of investment that if people gathered all the tax that they're owed and then spent that money for the benefit of the people, it wouldn't just be, oh, we spent a lot of money, but at least things are better. It's actually you spend a lot of money and you get a return on that investment because you will spend money on things that lead to better jobs, better pay.
Can afford to go to a farmer's market and things like that. You know?
Right, they can afford, and people in the third world don't need, you know, can afford to do something other than single-use plastics. It has a knock-on effect around the world. I genuinely think the UN should stop bother trying to avert war because they can't do it, but they could actually, you know, just if they had, like, if they managed to enforce, like, an international compact that says you can't move your head office to the Cayman Islands and avoid tax, you know, these cross-country agreements could be put in place that actually made it more effective. That would actually do far more good than, please don't do that. We condemn what you've just done. So thanks.
Oh, Putin, don't do that. Why exactly. are you doing that, Putin?
We condemn what you're doing in the strongest terms. Yeah, because he's what, the sort of person who is definitely swayed by condemnation.
Exactly what happened with Hitler. God, Hitler, don't invade Czechoslovakia. What are you doing, Hitler? Why are you doing that, Hitler?
We will send you a very strongly worded letter if you don't stop.
Bad boy, Hitler. Stop. And then Putin, oh, don't do that. Don't do that, Putin. Why do you want to invade Ukraine, Putin? Why you stop doing that? Oh, Putin, you invaded Ukraine. It's like, yeah, I said I was going to invade Ukraine. Right.
Yeah, so, it's been quite obvious for about 8 years that he was going to do that.
Like, not the biggest fan of the guy. I think what he's doing is pretty evil, and he's committing some nasty war crimes against humanity. But he's a man of his word. He said he was going to do it, and you did fuck all to stop him doing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the international community has really fallen asleep on the job over recent years, and there's a number of things in that. Putin has helped to engineer some of that. He exploited the Brexit debate, and he's exploited divisions between countries in Europe. He exploited the dysfunctional nature of the US political system, which is just to say, he hasn't created these scenarios. He's just, the Russians have worked out what the weak points of the West are. Yep. And to have Trump in place for 4 years to undermine NATO and to completely undermine America's kind of checks and balances on all sorts of things. Bear in mind, the first thing Trump got impeached for, he got impeached twice. The first time he was impeached was over putting economic pressure on the Ukraine to help him against Joe Biden. And he had people from Russia attending meetings in his office and turned off the cameras so no one knew what they were talking about. He stopped listening to his security briefings. He stopped people saying, oh, Putin is interfering in elections. He's hacking you. He's doing all these things. He said, no, I don't believe it. And it's like, Putin has had a fucking free run at this for several years. and prior to that, here's the interesting thing. There are some people going, and some of this comes from like Russian propaganda, and some of it comes from the usual kind of... There's actually two groups politically in the UK who seem to be supporting Putin. One is people like Aaron Banks, one of the big backers of Brexit, who are on Russia's payroll. But also, you've got some of the residual kind of far-left, beardy, weirdy types who've been around since, like, the 80s, who will support anything that is lined up with Russia and against the West. I remember them when they published the magazine Living Marxism, and they refused to, acknowledge that there were any war crimes being committed by Serbians in the Balkans because the Serbians were aligned to Russia. And they are going around, the Stop the War Coalition, they're around going around, oh, this is, you know, the West is the aggressor, Russia is... is just defending itself. And these people are like talking absolute bullshit. So, but leaving them to one side, right? Because Putin is in the wrong and he's a total cunt. But the diplomatic approach of the West to Russia has been flawed for quite some time now. This is not to say that Russia isn't the right to do what it's doing. They're absolutely not. But successful diplomacy against Russia has been broadly similar for over 200 years, okay? When the Napoleonic Wars came to an end and all the different countries of Europe sat down for a peace treaty to kind of sort things out and rebuild France and all of that, Russia was at the table, and everyone who wasn't Russia had an agenda to stop Russia getting what it wanted. Because what Russia always wants is control of the countries near to them, especially down to get them close to the Mediterranean so that they can have warm water ports. Because you think about large parts of Russia just fucking freeze up for the winter, right? And economically, they need transport routes that can get them shipping around the world. The same reason that Britain took South Africa so that it could get sail ships around the point of Africa when it had an empire, and the same reason Britain wanted control of the Suez Canal so that it could get its ships around the world. It is an economic driver for countries. And you look at where Russia, when it was the Tsars and when it was the Soviet Union, and now it's under Putin, where they send in their troops and where they kind of go in and affect their efforts, it's always in the same place. It's always around. You look where Crimea is, right? Crimea is in the Black Sea, and you can take ships from the Black Sea through the Bosphorus, yeah, to the Mediterranean, right? It's not an accident that Russia is going, oh, yeah, that place historically belongs to us. They don't give a fuck if Mongolia historically belongs to them because it's got no strategic value to them. They're always going after things that have got huge strategic value to them. It's not a surprise that this is where Russia's interested. We've known about this for 200 years, and all the time... Back then, 200 years ago, 1815, Treaty of Vienna, people sat across from Russia, shook hands, spoke nicely and everything else, but in the background they're going, don't let Russia get what it wants. That's always been the diplomatic effort, is you've got to stop Russia from expanding beyond a certain point. And they'll have a different agenda for Britain, a different agenda for France. It's just what it's always been. And the Soviet Union was all about, this is the Americans did not fucking get, that it was, there might have been the Soviet Union, there might have been communists, it's exactly the same diplomatic aims and strategic aims for Russia, just with a red flag over it. It's exactly the fucking same shit. And the one flaw, right, of something like NATO is that it was designed to be like a counterbalance to the Soviet Union when everyone thought the Soviet Union is the enemy, they're going to instill communism all around the West and all of our democracies will fall if we let the Soviet Union do too much. And NATO was designed to protect against that. And now you've got people joining NATO and inviting these Eastern European countries to join NATO when the purpose is different with Russia. It's actually, that looks like we're actually joining people's armies up against Russia. And we should be stopping Russia. We should be containing Russia. But NATO it's an outdated way to do that, and it's been used as a propaganda tool and an excuse for Russia to do a lot of bad shit. Because NATO looks like we're going to get all these Eastern European countries to join up with us and form a bank of armies against Russia, as if it's still the Cold War, as if the Berlin Wall is still up, and it's not. And our diplomatic approach to Russia should have had the same goals, which is to contain Russia and keep it out of the Ukraine and keep it away from the Mediterranean. But the diplomatic methods we've been using to it are quite flawed. And I'm sorry for the big rambling history lesson. But the thing is, this is not to say that NATO is in the wrong or is like given any justification for Russia to do what it's doing. But it's like, if your football team has got bad tactics and lets in a goal, right, you've got to look at whether you're doing the right things against your opposition. Do you know what I mean? And that doesn't mean you support the opposition scoring three goals against your team. It's like saying, can we line up our defences more effectively? Because this 1980s offside trap doesn't fucking work anymore. We actually need to work out the tactics that work in the 21st century. And the other issue is the EU. Because inviting these countries to join the EU, Russia sees that as a massive provocation. That doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't mean it's wrong for those people to join the EU. But we need a more subtle way to have economic links to those countries and incentivize Ukraine and all of these Eastern European countries and Bulgaria, all of them, to look more towards the West than to Russia, without it obviously looking like we're inviting all of these countries to join a club that's against Russia. And it's a subtle but very, very important distinction that says we should not let Russia do what it's doing. I think we should be fucking doing everything, all the sanctions, everything we're doing to Russia to kind of stop what they're doing. I'll collapse the ruble, fucking collapse their economy. They started this war. Fuck them. They need to be fucking stopped. But then after that, we need to look at our diplomatic approach and the way countries across the West are lined up so that we don't use such blunt instruments to keep Russia where we want them. Do you know what I mean? Am I getting my point across?
No, I get what you're saying. This whole scenario is such a tough thing to deal with, because I've got no confidence in a competent leader being able to deal with Russians because of their sheer size and just their general mindset. They are very stubborn. They will justify anything they do to the ends of the earth. I mean, that's what they did throughout the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. It's all the same shit, whether it's the Tsars or Stalin or Putin.
Any bad shit they did, it was kind of like, oh well, you know. But
they always use the same tactics. You know, we all look at Mikhail Gorbachev as a big step forward from the bad old days of communism and Stalin and Brezhnev and all of them, right? Although we saw Brezhnev as a step forward from Khrushchev and Cuba and all of that shit. But Mikhail Gorbachev, all the while Glasnost was going and we were in, you know, opening up Russia and having better relationships between Russia, you know, the Soviet Union and the West. In 1991, when the first Gulf War kicked off and all the world's eyes were focused on Iraq and Kuwait, Gorbachev sent in the troops to Chechnya.
Right. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Because everyone was looking the other way. And Russia does the same tactics, whoever it is. Gorbachev is generally regarded with sympathy, did exactly the same stuff. It's all always the same. And you're right, I mean, it's not, you know, it's always about maintaining an uneasy balance, but you just need to be, look at what this country is, look at the mess the UK's got into with Russia, right? The ruling party of the UK, the Conservative Party, is almost exclusively funded by offshore, unaccountable money from Russia. right?
That's good.
Boris Johnson is, you know, getting paid 100,000 or, you know, taking £100,000 for Tory coffers. I'm sure he pockets some of it himself, to play tennis with Russian oligarchs. He has holidays on yachts of Russians who have links with Russia. Right. And not only that, you've got people like Abramovich and all these other Russian oligarchs who are moving their money into this country. And we've just been inviting them in and let them do what they like. And what happens to people who pay lots of money to political parties? They get what they want. Yeah. And it's that our government is so fucking compromised. And now it's playing out, right? It's really important, the sanctions regime to stop Russia's invasion of Ukraine right now. Just should mention it in case anyone downloads this later and they fucking forgot. And it's, you know, March 2022 and there's a war on in Ukraine, right? But the sanctions regime that Western countries are trying to bring in place depends on the fact that Russia has been preparing for this for years and has bought hundreds of billions of dollars worth, euros, foreign currency, right? So if you want to actually cripple the Russian economy and stop them invading Ukraine, you have to freeze all of their assets. You have to freeze Russian assets wherever you can find them. You know, Putin's kids are not in Russia. His kids are, or if they're still, you know, young, are educated abroad. They're in fucking Germany or Switzerland or somewhere, right? That money is stashed in accounts all around the world. It's in offshore accounts. It's with oligarchs who claim to not have anything to do with the Russian government, but you all know are friends with Putin. So you've got to go in and stop that stuff. The British government has got some of that money. The British government depends on some of that money for the next fucking election campaign. How can you rely on them to support the sanctions? And as a result, right, the Germans and the French and the Americans, they are actually sanctioning individuals who we know have got billions and billions of dollars and have got links to Russia, right? They're actually seizing their yachts. They're actually sending people in saying, right, we're actually taking over this house. We're actually freezing your bank account. We're doing all these things. Do you know what Boris Johnson has done? He has given the Russian oligarchs who've got property, money and influence in the UK 4 to 6 weeks to get their affairs in order and slink out of the country. He's not gone in to stop them and freeze their assets. It's a massive fucking exposure. And the worst thing about all this is that Putin has been planning for this and we fucking sleepwalked into it. And it looks like a lot of the sanctions are working and that's a good thing and it's actually making life very uncomfortable for Putin. But it could be a lot stronger if our government... And how embarrassing is that our government is the weak link? In the 1980s, right, you had Labour politicians attending CND meetings. And because there was this perception that all that stuff's a bit lefty and anything a bit lefty has got must have links to communism and Russia, they had... Tory Labour MPs on a watch list. MI5 had them under surveillance. MI5 was watching their fucking house just in case any of them had links to Russia. And now our security service is sitting back and letting money and influence fucking flow into Downing Street. It's fucking unbelievable. It's like everyone's going, oh, you got to stop Russia doing this. Putin's the bad guy. Yeah, well, we knew Putin was the bad guy. We've known he's the bad guy over the Ukraine and Crimea for about 8 fucking years. And you haven't been watching him fucking take over our fucking seat of government. It's fucking incredible. I got a bit on my soapbox there. I apologise.
No, sorry. It's like I said, it's one of those ones where there's not a lot we can do, but there's some things we can do, and other countries are doing that, and we don't seem to be doing those things. We're just like, oh, we'll stop sending satellites up from Baikonur in Kazakhstan. It's like, no, fucking, like, you know, stop them being able to use their money, which is what they've been doing. They've stopped them being able to use SWIFT payments.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's funny.
It's
very weird. I read an article or read a news headline today that local authorities are asking the British government for permission to not award any more business to Gazprom. Because Gazprom, the Russian state energy provider, always goes in on local government energy, electricity and energy tenders and underbids massively against, doesn't necessarily have to make any money, right? Because influence is better than profit sometimes. As Rupert Murdoch will tell you, and supplies all the energy to most local authorities in this country. And because of our procurement laws, our contract laws, you can't just take the business away from them. And when you rebid the business, you have to give it to the lowest bidder. So we're sitting there going, can we, you know, we're supposed to be sanctioning Gazprom and kicking them out so that we don't, you know, that money isn't flowing back to Putin. And all of our local councils are having to ask the government for permission to make an exception and not keep giving money to Gazprom. And guess who that is? Michael Gove. Great. This all rests on fucking Michael Gove and Liz Truss's shoulders that they're going to do a good job. The good thing is that actually, you know, I don't like, you know, being strong-armed by America, but only when America started putting pressure on the UK did they start stepping up their sanctions efforts. Because America has actually taken this shit seriously. And Biden is quite cleverly, I think, or his advisors are quite cleverly, putting all the effort on sanctions. Because on the one hand, the West is supplying Ukraine with as many weapons as we can get to them so they can hold off Russia, while at the same time, America is coordinating a global effort to fuck Russia's economy so they can't afford to fight this war anymore. Which is not ideal, but we all know what an escalation of this war could lead to. They fucking dropped, you know, they fucking fired on a nuclear power station yesterday, right? They didn't hit any of the dangerous bits, but it's still fucking hairy to hear about it. So a completely open escalation of conflict with Russia would be really bad. But what Biden is doing is he's making sure Ukraine is going to hold Russia off while he fucks Russia's economy. And actually, that's quite a decent response. But it's quite shameful that our country is having to be kicked to do what's obviously the right thing. It's really fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, no. Russia are obviously a very scary, you know, entity. They are enormous. They have a massive armory. They have the largest nuclear arsenal. So what can we do? I think, you know, France and Germany and all these other countries are doing the right thing. But did you have any confidence in Boris Johnson, who
no, not at all,
won a Brexit referendum with the help of Russians to do anything about it?
It's not. Yeah, and it's not just Johnson. I mean, prior to Johnson, the previous prime ministers of the UK and the Conservative government were cozying up to Russia quite heavily. And full disclosure, back in the 90s, Tony Blair did think, because Russia is an emerging economy coming out of communism, it was time to trade with them and open things up, and that would be a good thing. I think the way you would defend Blair at that time is that, you know, experience might make him think differently after 5 years of that. He might have thought maybe this isn't the right thing to do. And I think where kind of Blair let us down, that he just got too in bed with business. And that was his problem. But since 2010, it's been quite obvious that what should have been happening is that there were meant to be sanctions. Not necessarily open sanctions like hostility to Russia, but like, you can't let them do this. You can't let them, you know, there's areas that Russian money should not be allowed to buy. And we were a fucking massive hole in it, you know? Imagine, you know, the responsibility is to build a wall, and different countries have got to build their sections of the wall. And you're looking along and saying, well, nice job, France, nice job, Germany, nice job, America, you built your wall really well. And you come and see how Britain's doing, and they fucking built a fucking door and let the Russians fucking walk through it. This has been happening for fucking years, because these sanctions shouldn't just have started now. They should have started, or some sanctions or some restrictions should have been in place 12 years ago. We should have been a lot more alert to the fact that Russia is hacking us. They're trying to hack us all over the shop, same as the Chinese are. They've got whole efforts to their cyber attacks. You know, why are we not fucking going out and kind of cutting the power to their, you know, why are our intelligence efforts, you know, James Bond isn't going to go out and fucking kill the bad guy in his volcano, but why isn't MI6 or why isn't there covert efforts to kind of close down or counteract that cyber war? We've been at cyber war with Russia for years. We seem to be fucking way behind on it. Why aren't we fighting back?
Why do you think?
Because Trump compromised the American government and Boris Johnson has helped compromise the British government. It's pretty clear. It's fucking terrible. But it just goes to show, though, that like the ruble has lost like 40% of its value overnight since the sanctions came in. That they're hurting. It proves that what Biden wants to do with these sanctions is working. And it's fucking shocking that the British government needed to be fucking kicked to do it. You've got fucking, our foreign secretary is Liz Truss. She's a fucking clown. She walked around Moscow with a fucking fur hat on so she could pose for photo shoots and look like Margaret Thatcher did in the 80s when she visited Gorbachev. And then was so fucking hopeless at the meetings that someone had to tap her on the shoulder and say, will you stop talking so the translator can like interpret what you've just said? That's who we've got fucking using our diplomatic efforts. And you look at who the British foreign secretary has been that. Before Liz Truss, it was Dominic Raab.
Oh, I've not got any confidence in him being able to fucking put a pair of trousers on.
He's a fucking moron. he was in charge of like organising some quite complex things to be put in place after Brexit, which included Northern Ireland. And he admitted he hadn't read the Good Friday Agreement. What a fucking twat. He was on holiday when we were trying to like avoid kind of a disaster when the troops were coming out of Afghanistan. He was going, oh, you know, I know I was on holiday, but I wasn't actually doing anything because the sea was closed. The sea was closed? What do you mean the fucking sea was closed?
Poseidon's put a big fucking gate up, for fuck's sake.
You know, and before that, Boris Johnson was foreign secretary. We all know exactly how fucking shit that was. He went out to Iran to try and get that Iranian-British woman who's been locked up for several years out and help her, and he made public statements that got them to add 2 years to her sentence. It's like, no, we can't say we weren't warned. We're actually, people are now looking back nostalgically at the era when Jeremy Hunt was the foreign secretary, for fuck's sake.
Oh, fucking hell. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Remember, yeah, it's like the other day we were talking, or we were like sharing comments on Facebook about Sunderland, you know, 8 years ago, thinking, how could it get any worse? It's the same thing with like British foreign secretaries. Oh, you can't get any worse than this, dick. Oh, yes, you can. It can get worse and more incompetent than this. It's fucking unbelievable, man.
It's a good laugh.
The one glimmer of hope is that the other countries that are sorting this shit out are actually hurting Russia, and they may well twist Britain's arm. And it's yet another thing that's been exposed is what a cunt Boris Johnson is. Because I remember, if you watch any of like the American kind of current affairs shows, some of the slightly satirical ones, some of them were kind of making jokes a little bit how Boris Johnson was under so much pressure for having parties. As if it was a case of, oh, come on, where's your sense of perspective that he's having parties? And they're kind of missing the bit where that's what they're trying to get Boris Johnson for, because all the other shit doesn't seem to stick to him, the corruption, the incompetence and everything else. But this stuff about clearly like falling down on the job and pressure from America on you know, being owned by Russia, this might actually fucking kill Boris Johnson off. And imagine the good outcome of this. If Putin's invasion of Ukraine fails, and he is irreparably damaged by this, and Boris Johnson gets forced out of office because of his links to Russia. Now that, as horrible as what's happening to Ukraine is, we can at least hope for that kind of outcome.
Well, hope for that kind of outcome and then get a leader who'll actually fucking do something about it. But the problem we always have with this is that you get rid of Boris Johnson, then who'd you get?
Some like, other cunt, Priti Patel.
I'd send her to fucking Ukraine, fuck off.
Well, do you see what's been happening with this? First of all, you've got Tory MPs who write columns for like right-wing newspapers expressing concern for like Ukrainian refugees, because he said, oh, and they look just like us. You can't help but sympathise with them. He says, well, that's a bit of a giveaway. That probably explains why you didn't sympathise with the other refugees that came out of wars, like the Syrians and the Afghans, you cunt. But then you're going, everyone else is going, right, we need to take Afghan refugees. And the British went, oh, no, you'll still need a visa, mate. Try and get a fruit-picking license. You're going, these are kids that have just been blown up out of their fucking home, and we're not going to let them in. Priti Patel is a genuinely fucking evil person.
I'd love to kick her cunt in. I think that's how politics should be done. We get Ronda Rousey of the UFC to stand for government, and it's just a fight.
Yeah.
No elections, just
I'd like to link them up to lie detectors that give an electric shock every time they lie.
Well, then that would also fucking kill them. Yeah. Except I'd like the person that wasn't Priti Patel to be linked up to like a little, like a shock pin, and Priti Patel can be linked to the national fucking grid.
Yeah. It's that little smirk of hers just makes me angry.
Oh, if you could punch a smile off someone's face, it would be that one.
Yeah,
it's a shite state of affairs.
That's all very depressing. Now, whenever we do this, we always try and finish on something a bit more upbeat, don't we? So that we don't send people away depressed. Have you seen any news that might make people laugh or smile, just to kind of end on a bit more of a cheery note?
I watched a video of, you know, they're not a big thing over here, but in America they have like these, I think they're called Roombas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like those vacuum cleaners.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, you sent me the link. Yeah, it made a break.
Basically, they've left the front door open, and the Roomba leaves the house, and then goes to the right off shot behind the door, and then comes back in shot across the door and leaves to the left. And someone's put "Goodbye, My Lover" by James Blunt over it, and it's a piece of art. It's fucking incredible.
A couple of things that made me smile. This is a few weeks old now, but I posted a link to it on the Adamson's versus socials. But when there were various right-wing COVID protests around the world, because remember when that was the biggest crisis that we had to worry about, and they were protesting against vaccine and other restrictions in New Zealand, and they were talking about what they could do to stop them, and they were they were trying to demoralize them by playing like irritating and annoying music. And James Blunt tweeted the New Zealand government and said, play my song, You're Beautiful. That'll disperse the crowd. So they did.
He's a bit of a Twitter legend, he is.
He's very good. I remember when they said, when they were talking about Joe Rogan and Neil Young, and Joni Mitchell was saying they will we'll take our music off if Joe Rogan stays. And James Blunt tweeted that he'd take his music off if Joe Rogan left. To try and motivate them. He's quite... The thing is, he's made his money. He doesn't care now.
And you know what? I think he gets a bad rap. Not all of his songs are shit.
Yeah, look, it is what it is, right? He's the housewife's choice. I mean, people... It's odd that people don't hate Michael Bublé as much as they hate James Blunt, and that's more or less the same thing.
Do you know what I like about Michael Bublé? He's got that kind of...
Music your gran likes, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Michael Bublé's got this persona that he's a kind of Christmas album kind of guy. Yeah, yeah. He's only around at Christmas. He's made one Christmas album.
Yeah, I know.
The other nine are just albums.
Yeah, yeah. But he's just nice and wholesome, isn't he? And he just doesn't mind it. There's a couple of other things that made me laugh. I don't know if you saw this article. There was a religious artwork in, let me find out where this is, an Italian... I thought this was going to be American, right? Because of the nature of the headline. A religious work of art has been removed from an Italian basilica, which is like a type of church. I don't know if that's a cathedral or whatever. But a religious work of art has been removed from an Italian church after a local priest and the businessman who commissioned the painting were found among the holy images.
Eh?
So they've got someone to do a big mural in an Italian church that's all inspiring and lovely. And there's a couple of things. There's a contemporary one. There's some of the traditional ones, like there's the Virgin Mary holding Jesus. There's like a bishop, you know, and there's like, you know, the dove of peace that kind of ended the flood in Noah's Ark and all of those traditional religious images. You've got a more contemporary one that's got a doctor with a mask on, which is presumably showing, you know, all these people who've done great things and sacrificed themselves for others, are guided by the hand of God. It's all very nice. But they also sneaked in a local priest and the businessman who commissioned the mural so that they could be on the painting as well. And they're all very embarrassed, so they've had to remove it. So imagine someone's asked you to... Can you imagine? It's like photobombing the Sistine Chapel. Can you imagine if Michelangelo had done like the God and Adam kind of famous, you know, painting with the fingers like touching, and there's just the grinning face of like his local sponsor in the back of the picture. I like that. That's just great. That's like someone grinning with two thumbs up behind like a religious icon. This is why we can't do religious iconography anymore. No one's got the gravitas to do it properly. There's another one that made me laugh. There's always, whenever a news headline starts Florida man, you know something fun's going to follow it.
Yes.
So this headline, this speaks for itself, really. Florida man arrested after stealing a crossbow by stuffing it down his trousers.
We could do an entire podcast about Florida Man.
Florida Man. Oh, we should probably do The Adamsons versus Florida Man. I think that would be quite good.
It sounds like I'm kind of ripping off an old podcast that I used to do, but we did one that I don't think managed to make it to air because of technical difficulties. But basically what you do is you just put in your date of birth and it gives you the funniest headline. And I think my one was, this guy got arrested for trying to get an alligator drunk. Just... I love Florida Man.
Florida Man's what fantastic. Yeah, it's that stuff always makes you. It's like he walks in with a crutch, and I think the crutch was, he either needed the crutch or was using it to hide things. He took a pair of cutting tools, removed the security tag, and then shoved it down his trousers before walking out. Amazingly, he made it out of the shop, but was arrested a few days later in the car park of the nearby store. The bit that blows my mind is that he actually got away with it for several days. No one noticed him with a giant crossbow-shaped bulge down his trousers when he walked out the front of the shop. Anything else catch your eye?
I don't think so.
Well, shall we leave it on that amusing note that in all of these things there are still a few frivolous headlines such as...
There's still Florida.
Photo bombing religious iconography and Florida man trying to keep us entertained through these dark times.
Yeah.
Thank you, Florida man. Don't go changing. This was the Adamsons versus Deliveroo. Next time it will be the Adamsons versus something else. The music was District 4 by Kevin MacLeod. Look forward to speaking to you next time.